And welcome on into Writer Than You, Bill. Final day on vacation. Ryan Hickey sitting in for him on this beautiful sports-filled Friday. Thank you for starting off your Friday morning with us right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Very excited for you to be with us. Because unless right now you are a Philadelphia sports fan, then boy, it's as bad of a Friday as you could ever have. Otherwise, this is a good Friday. Going to a sports-filled weekend, a great college football slate, solid NFL slate here as well, some big-time playoff baseball games today and tomorrow. It's also a Friday. Again, unless you're a Philly fan, it's hard to wake up on a Friday and be in a good mood. And if that did happen, number one, my apologies. But number two here, over the next 2 hours, we're going to try our best to turn that Friday upside down and have you feel good here on this Friday going into the weekend. Selfishly, I'm in a good mood. I love filling in for Bill. It's always a lot of fun to be able to talk to you on this format, but especially on a Friday, where for the first time since taking over for Pretty Daddy and filling in for Bill right here on Writer Than You, I get to do Bum of the Week for real this time. I know we did it a few weeks ago and got in trouble and won Bum of the Week the following week because of that, because we jumped the gun, but very excited now. We've already gotten permission. This does count. We are doing Bum of the Week with no repercussions, unless I guess Bill wins. And it's going to count in the record books. Fired up for that, as always, Bum of the Week, 11:40 Eastern, 8:40 a.m. Pacific time. You do not want to miss that, as we have some great, great candidates here lined up for some bumdom. Speaking of bumdom, that's what you could describe right now, the state of the Philadelphia Eagles. Coming off last night's 34-17 loss to the hapless Giants, I came away from that game more concerned about Philly than I did impressed with the Giants. And this, by the way, is coming from someone, right? Just go back to Monday, who I was preaching patience when it came to the Eagles' offense. If you go back to Animal House, I was the security guard. And everyone's at the parade and everyone's running for their lives. And you have the one security guard saying, calm down, remain calm, all is well. I tried to do that same impersonation on Monday morning after the Eagles lost to the Broncos, blew a 17-3 fourth quarter lead in which their offense was totally out of whack. I tried to preach patience and say, you know what? Philly actually could be better off going through this and losing a game like that than finding a way to win. And now, just 4 days later, here I am officially hitting the panic button. And it's been hit. I am concerned about the state of the Eagles' offense. Here's why. Frankly, in two words, I'll sum it up for you. They stink. This entire season, the Eagles' offense has stunk. In all six games they've played so far, they've been outgained by their opponent in every single game. Now, they're 4-2, right? And outside of the last 5 days, in which they lost two games, going into less than a week ago, they didn't have a loss. Yet, despite being outgained by every opponent they played. But now through six games, they've been outgained by every single team they played, which, by the way, to start a season is a record, NFL record, never been done before by a defending Super Bowl champion. And the reason why we see the Eagles offense constantly sputtering, and the reason why we see their opponent having more success than them, is because there's zero creativity with this offense. Nothing comes easy. And it all centers around the fact that they don't have an identity, which is mind-boggling. Because just go back to last year. We all knew what the Eagles were. They were a run the ball down your throat and take the top off the defense with one of the best wide receiver duos you have in A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. It was obvious. It was simple. The Eagles were just so much talented, so much more talented, I should say, and executed at such a high level that didn't matter if you knew what was coming or not. You couldn't stop it. Saquon Barkley ran for 2,000 yards. Jalen Hurts was in the MVP conversation as well. He was efficient. That passing game, for the most part, everyone was happy. You still had some A.J. Brown outbursts, and he's reading books on the sideline. But for the most part, just like the security guard from Animal House, all was well after the bye for the Eagles last year, in which, outside of the one game Jalen Hurts was concussed in against Washington, every game Jalen Hurts played in the finish, they won after their Week 5 bye. But now you look at this year, despite the fact they basically ran back the same team from last year, bringing back the same offense minus Kellen Moore, who left to be the Saints head coach, we're looking at a team that is completely lost. And what's even more perplexing about that is the fact that while Kevin Petullo, their new offense coordinator, is a first-time play caller, he's been with this program and this team for the last 5 years. Before being promoted to offense coordinator this past offseason, he was their passing game coordinator for the last 4 years. He got an inside detailed look, and not only, by the way, what works, right? What a humming Eagles offense looks like both last year and the 2022 season when they went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Chiefs, but he also saw what not to do in that 2023 season in which that Eagles offense and that Eagles team started 10-1 and completely had the bottom fall out from under them. Petullo, despite again being a first-time play caller, was in that Eagles organization now for the last 5 years. He knows what it looks like to run an efficient offense. He knows also what not to do. And so I am shocked you're sitting here a third of the way through the season and we don't know what this Eagles identity is. They don't know what their identity is. And by the way, it's simple. It's very simple. I'll tell you what the identity should be. Run first, pass second. It's not even up for debate. With that offensive line that has been disappointing so far this year, with Saquon Barkley being either the best or a top two running back in the NFL, with Jalen Hurts and his mobility being able to run the football, you should be a run-first team every single week. You should be running the ball two-thirds of your plays. It's mind-boggling that we're sitting here talking about an Eagles offense that can't figure out what the hell they're doing. And in six games so far this season, to highlight this, what I think they should be doing and what they're not doing, in six games this year, three of them, half of the season so far, the Eagles have attempted more pass plays in a game than run plays. And outside of last night, in which they trailed for most of the game, they were ahead in every game. Remember, they were 4-0 and were up 17-3 against the Broncos just on Sunday. They've been with, holding the lead or been in a close game every single week. They don't have to, they're not down by three scores and they have to pass, and that's kind of get the play calling out of whack because you got to, try to come back quickly, and you do that by passing the ball, not running the ball. They've been in advantageous run spots all season long outside of last night. Yet, for half the season, they attempt more pass plays than run plays. It makes no sense. And look, let's just call it for what it is. I'm a big Jalen Hurts fan. After the Super Bowl, I called him a top five quarterback in the NFL. I thought he was getting extremely disrespected and not getting enough praise for how good he is. This season, so far through six games, Jalen Hurts has looked awful as a passer. There's no other way to say it. And by the way, this is coming off a game last night in which he actually got into a rhythm early. He started 9 of his first 10. He threw for 283 passing yards in the game. Even though statistically, it looked good. Like, when you watched the game last night, it never felt like the Eagles were in rhythm. It never felt like anything came easy to them. It never looked like that passing offense, especially Hurts, looked comfortable. And despite the 283 and despite some of the nice numbers in the box score, right, some of the biggest plays missed were by Jalen Hurts in the passing game that cost them this game. Go back to the second half. Devontae Smith is running wide open. There is not a giant defender in the zip code. What does Jalen Hurts do? Overthrow him. Should have been six. Could have been a touchdown that turns the game upside down. Instead, it's an incomplete pass. Eagles end up punting. Later in the game, fourth quarter, Eagles finally have some momentum. Moving the ball down the field. Jalen Hurts, completion after completion after completion. Get into the red zone. What does he do? Throw an interception. Red zone pick that essentially ends the game and ends all hope of a comeback for Philly and just more cements right now how broken this team is, because right now you're trying to win games on the arm of Jalen Hurts. I think you're trying to at times placate A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, who are clearly not happy. Sometimes, you know what? You got to treat them with tough love. This is what we do. We run the ball first. And you know what? You may not get the volume that you want in terms of getting 10 catches a game and 15 targets a game. But if we run the ball successfully like we're supposed to, like we did last year, you'll get two, three, four chances for a deep over-the-top pass because the defense has to put 8-9 defenders in the box, you're going to get your one-on-one opportunity. Go make a play. And instead, it feels like they're just trying to make everyone happy. Trying to be the nice guy. And that right now has led to offensive failure right now for Philly. This is a stat from Benjamin Solek of ESPN that I think is also telling. Jalen Hurts, his last three games on third down, only third down, is 6 of 28. That's 21.4% completion percentage. Jalen Hurts, at this point right now, this season, is not good enough to lead you with his arm. But yet here the Eagles are throwing the ball, it is mind-boggling, makes no sense. Nothing's come easy. They look out of whack, discombobulated. Now look, to their credit, last year through four games, first month of the season, they had to look much better. They were 2-2. Their boo birds were out in Philly. This team, we're basically saying a lot of the same things we're saying right now this time last year. And to their credit, they figured it out after the bye and took off. They haven't had a bye yet. Maybe this mini one they have between now and when they play next week, something could get right. But this team, for running it back and how much continuity they had from last year to this year, they seem completely, completely lost. And it's concerning. After the game, I want to play you some of this here from Eagles offensive players. You hear, and even they sound perplexed and lost and frustrated right now with the state of the offense. I want you to listen to this from Lane Johnson, guy who's played a lot of football in Philly, who's won two Super Bowls, who knows what good offense looks like, who knows what bad offense looks like. Listen to him basically say right now the offense is too damn predictable.
It's kind of a finger point in the show. I'm with Kevin until the end. A lot of it goes down to execution. So we'll go back and look at this tape and see what we got to get fixed. We're moving forward, maybe more efficient, less predictable, and capitalize on big plays and explosives.
Look, that's part of the deal, right? Execution. Jalen Hurts had a wide open Devontae Smith yesterday, missed him. You just have to hit that. Like, period, stop. You have to hit that throw. Bare minimum, underthrow it till he catches it, and maybe the defenders, because Devontae Smith has a slowdown, instead of a touchdown, it's a 50-yard gain. Whatever it is, you have to hit that completion. He didn't. You can't throw an interception in the red zone. He did. Execution has been bad. Again, he's 6 of 28 on third down, Jalen Hurts is in his last three games. Part of that is because, going back to what Lane Johnson said about predictability, on first and second down, the Eagles are not getting it done. So they're facing a lot of third and longs. They've also had some bad penalties here as well, so now they're in third and really long more times than they should be. They are their own worst enemy at times. They shoot themselves in the foot. And it's led to an offense right now that is one of the worst in the NFL, despite, on paper, you could argue having the most talent of any team in the league. Let's listen to Jalen Hurts, who once again, right, this is what Hurts has been, by the way. Sometimes it vacillates between the first half struggles or second half struggles, but whatever it is, more times than not this season, Jalen Hurts on this offense have a good, one good half, one bad half. If you want to say, it wasn't great last night, but the better half was definitely the first half that scored 13 points, or 17 points, excuse me. Got two touchdowns. All their points came in the first half. Jalen Hurts talking about right now the second half struggles for the Eagles.
Got to be better. I take ownership for it. A lot of autonomy and a lot of opportunity there with the ball in my hands. And given those situations, I have to be wiser and more detailed with it. So always looking inward first, looking inward on the things that I can control. And, I see a lot of opportunity in this. I give a lot of credit to how they came out and played today. They played a very, very, very well game. And wasn't good enough on our end.
They were not good enough. And it does start internally with himself, speaking of Jalen Hurts. It starts with Hurts. And the reason why I'm panicking here, to kind of finish this off, because again, just 5 days ago on Monday, I was preaching about how this embarrassment, blowing a 17-3 lead, throwing the ball 38 times compared to running the ball just 11 times, coming off a week in which A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith were complaining about how little they get the ball, again, I thought would, in the long run, benefit the Eagles because it would kind of show them what they're not. And when you try to placate to people, when you try to make other people happy, This is what happens. You blow an embarrassingly big lead at home, and you walk away dejected. I thought the message would be sent. I know it's a short week, so it's a lot to do. But still, again, you're not just we're not asking you to reinvent the wheel. Just we're asking you to do what you did last year. But the reason why now I'm panicking, why that patience has been thrown out the window and the panic button has been hit, is because that Giants defense we saw yesterday stinks. Stinks. They're not going against the Chiefs. I think the Broncos still have a very talented and very good defense. You were going against a bottom third defense in the league who struggles stopping the run, who struggles stopping the pass, who struggles with everything. This was a defense who just last week made Spencer Rattler look competent. Competent. Spencer Rattler, who's not very good. Yet, he had more success, and that Saints offense had more success 5 days ago than this way more talented, way more accomplished Eagles offense did last night. This was an opportunity. This is supposed to be a moment where the Eagles got back on track, beat up a bad divisional opponent, beat up what honestly has been one of the league's biggest punching bags over the last few years, with a defense that is not creative at all and embarrassing. And instead, they got embarrassed. They were the clowns. I'm worried. I am very, very worried right now about this Eagles offense because they have an identity crisis big time here. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN. It is Ryan Hickey right now in for Bill on Rider Than You. I want to hear your thoughts because I'm panicking. I'm worried right now about this Eagles offense, and I hate to say it. I'm starting to see shades of 2023 all over again. Where the record looked good early, they were finding ways to win games. That team was rifled with dysfunction, infighting, no trust in the coaches whatsoever, and they went from 10-1 to out of the playoffs and getting embarrassed in the playoffs by the Buccaneers in round number one and leaving that season with their tail between their legs. This feels like we are starting to see a replica of 2023 all over again here in 2025. So I am worried. If you are not, if you want to take my role that I had on Monday and you want to preach patience by the Eagles and want to say why the sky is not falling in Philadelphia, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN. That's the number you can call. Also, you could tweet me Ryan_Hickey3. That's Ryan_Hickey3 on Twitter here as well if you want to get your thoughts heard on the show about right now your take on this Philadelphia Eagles offense, or really lack thereof. So we'll get your thoughts here, and when we return here on the show, we'll stick with Phil. We'll do a little postseason baseball reaction from yesterday, including why if you think the Phillies lost primarily because of Orion Kerkering's wild and errant throw home, you're missing the point. I'll tell you who really is to blame for the Eagles, for the Phillies NLDS exit when we do return. It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast. Welcome back to Rider Than You.
I am in total disagreement with Ryan on this because I am Rider Than You or Rider Than Ryan right now.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Speaking of Ryan, it is Ryan. Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Rider Than You. Bill's Paris 20th anniversary vacation ends, I believe, tomorrow. I believe is when he's flying back. Either way, it doesn't matter. Today, tomorrow, Sunday, he will be with you on Monday morning, ready, I'm sure, to recap the big trip and obviously the big weekend in sports we have upcoming here as well. Matt Rashford does tweet at Ryan_Hickey3. His Bum of the Week nominees, let me just read you them very quickly here. James Franklin, Amari DiMercato, LeBron James, and Bill Belichick. I will not give away the nominees just yet, just to build some suspense. We get to it about, I don't know, hour 20 from now or so. I'll just say this. May hear a name or two repeated from Matt's list for my Bum of the Week nominees here as well. Very, very, very excited to give you that here in a little bit. But before we get there, boy, this was one of those games when you look back at Phillies Dodgers yesterday that was an instant classic, a true playoff pitcher's duel, even though it wasn't, 1v1. Christopher Sanchez pitched really well for the Phillies. Tyler Glasnow did enough and pitched well for the Dodgers, but they weren't going toe-to-toe. It was more of a bullpen game there for the Dodgers. Ends up Dodgers 2, Phillies 1 in 11 innings, in part because of Orion Kerkering's errant throw home with the bases loaded and two outs, in which he had an easy throw to first that would have got them out of the inning, panicked, threw it home wildly. That error leads to the Dodgers winning. And this is like one of those, I'm a Mets fan, so I was rooting against the Phillies hard. A lot of schadenfreude going on in my life here, rooting hard against the Yankees two nights ago. And you heard Andrew Bogus when he was filling in yesterday, his joy. And I shared a lot of that joy in watching the Yankees lose. And I did have a lot of joy in watching the Phillies season end. But boy, oh boy, do I feel gutted for Kerkering. That was one of those, I was watching the game on the couch. My fiance was, I can't even say watching with her. She was sitting next to me, but on her phone, just kind of not paying attention to what was on the screen. And so we were kind of sitting there, and I don't really say much. I'm just kind of just watching, observing. And all of a sudden, when he throws that ball home wildly, I let out a, oh my God. Just a gasp. And she's like, what happened? So I explained to her, because they didn't show the replay right away. They let the moment go. They showed the celebration. So it took about 90 seconds or so to show the replay. So I was explaining to her in that time what happened, why it was such a bad play, why he had the easy throw at first. He panicked, threw it home, and now the season's over. And then they showed the replay. And even though she knew what was coming, just didn't know what it looked like, she gasped. She's like, oh my God. It was just one of those plays where you're so shocked that happened, right? Because you're so used to professionals making the right play, not panicking under pressure. It highlights why, you know, number one, we're all human. Also, too, that not to make this a big analytics point, but like a lot of the, I'm not even going to call them nerds because I don't want to go low when a lot of people like to go low and talk about analytics. This is what I'll say. A lot of analytics folks look at outs the same. Strike out, fly out, ground out, who cares? An out is an out. Doesn't matter how you do it. So let's just swing for the fence. If we strike out, it's the same thing as a ground ball. That last night is the example, perfect example why that does not, no, that's flawed logic. Because if Pache strikes out, instead of putting the ball in play, even though it's what, let's just call it a 95% out play, right? Like 95% of the time that play happens, there's an out. That happened in June. I don't think Kerkering is throwing the ball home. I think he's throwing to the first base calmly. But the moment I think got to him, the pressure got to him. It also kind of seemed like there was a little bit of panic. And I'm not so sure how much he was aware of the situation in terms of how many outs they had. As well, they had two outs to throw to first base. The inning's over. But that's the perfect example as to why, again, you want to talk about analytics and the numbers, etc. You're still dealing with human beings. And I'd much rather make them make the play, even if it's a 99.9% probability that they do, whether it's a fly ball, ground ball, etc., make them make the play, because that 1%, 0.01% of the time they don't, it's like this for the Phillies, and your season ends and the Dodgers win. But again, I feel gutted for Kerkering. I give him a lot of credit because he did what I don't think a lot of people would do in this situation. He took accountability. He met with the media after the game and explained what was going through his head, what his mindset was in trying to throw home instead of throwing to first base.
Just kind of, once that pressure got to me, I just thought it was a faster throw of the JT, a little quicker throw than trying to cross body at the Bryce. So, just more throw.
Look, he said it what it is. I give him a lot of credit. He didn't try to make excuses. He didn't try to duck from the media. We've seen plenty of players, right, leave the locker room early before the media get there. Run and hide. A lot of credit to Orion Kerkering for owning up to it. It sucks. It's heart-wrenching. Again, even as a Mets fan who hates the Phillies, you feel gutted for him. It's such, honestly, a crappy way to end. It really is. Right? A wild throw home to end your season is probably one of the, like, I'd rather just give a grand slam at that point instead of an errant throw home to lose the game on an error. Sucks. But with that said, well, Kerkering had the final, right? The highlight play that's going to be replayed as of right now we have MLB Network on the show and it's being replayed at least like five different times since the show started. So that's the play right there. Everyone's going to be stuck in their mind. Phillies fans are going to live with it for the rest of their life. It's not on Kerkering. You want to talk about who is the most to blame so far in this series? It's the top three bats for the Phillies. It's their big stars. Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper. One of those three guys show up in any game outside of game three, the Phillies win this series. You had Trey Turner, who won the NL batting title this year, batting 304. You had Kyle Schwarber, who swatted 56 home runs and hit on, Wednesday night, one of the longest home runs I've ever seen. Again, I trust the numbers. I don't think they're lying to us, but when they said he hit that ball 455 feet off the roof, I thought for sure that was a 500-foot home run. It was an absolute bomb of all bombs. And you had Bryce Harper, who despite missing basically a month, 30 games this season with a wrist injury, so 27 homers, 75 RBIs, it's still a really good season for him. Three guys that produced all throughout the season for the Phillies. Yeah, in the postseason, we saw them go a combined 10 for 50. That's a whopping 200 average from the top. The Phillies lost this series not because of Kirk Ring's wild throw, because they couldn't hit. Their offense in games 1, 2, and 4 were terrible. The only game they won, ironically, was when the offense got going. And what happened? Those three guys, Turner, Schwarber, Harper, all had big games. All played really well. All got hits, drove in runs, got on base. The other three games, they were invisible. And not the first time we're talking about Bryce Harper disappearing in the playoffs. Trey Turner being a non-factor. Kyle Schwarber striking out and struggling and doing nothing. This is now more of a trend. I'm not saying trade any of those guys. They're super talented. We just told you how great of regular seasons they had. They're not washed. You got to fire the hitting coach, Kevin Long. You got to get some sort of new approach in there. When we had, when Jody was filling in, Jody Mack on Wednesday here on Righter Than You, as it is Ryan Hickey in for Bill on this Friday, we had Matt Snyder, CBS Sports. I thought Matt made a really interesting point about the Phillies offense. And he basically said this is a super talented lineup, but it's like basically nine guys that are acting as individuals. Nine guys that are just trying to hit a home run on their own. Nine guys that aren't working in unison, trying to work counts, trying to have, you know, pitchers unload their arsenal, get that high pitch count, get to the bullpen, work walks, put pressure on the opposing defense. It's just nine guys up there individually trying to hit home runs. There's no pass the baton, let me walk, set it up, let me bunt you guy over, let me pull the ball through the runner on second base and no one out to the right side and move him over to third base to set up the next guy to drive him in. There's no approach. There's a lot of talent, there's no approach. And you're starting to see right now the issue for the Phillies is that when those three guys are not hitting, the rest of the lineup is not very good. Not a lot of guys you can rely on. They spent a lot of money and invested a lot in those three guys. It could be interesting to see what Kyle Schwarber's free agent market looks like this offseason, coming off his big-time regular season. But if you're the Phillies, to me, that's where it was lost. Your top three guys hitting a total, or combined, I should say, 200 through the four games, 10 of 50. You get any sort of offense from them, you probably win this series in four. Maybe even three. All three games they lost, they left it open for the Dodgers to come back. Dodgers did. That's who to blame. That's, to me, where this series loss falls on. Kirk Ring will be the highlight. And the memory that Phillies fans will have for the rest of their lives, this series, they don't lose track of it. This series was lost by the top three guys in their lineup doing absolutely nothing. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN. It is Ryan Hickey right now in for Bill and Ryder. Then you're really fast here before we get to Andrew's update. Other games we have. So also last night, Cubs kept their season alive. They beat the Brewers 6-0. They face a Game 5 tomorrow night in Milwaukee. Even though right now the Cubs seemingly have gotten momentum back, their starting pitching has evened out after a rough two games, I still like Milwaukee going home and winning Game 5. And part because the Brewers, they are, at least in this postseason so far, in this series, through four games, they're a different team at home versus on the road. At home in Games 1 and 2, they combine for 16 runs. Games 3 and 4 on the road, 3. I think going back home, having the crowd behind him, Wrigley Field was raucous. And it was electric these last two nights, which the Cubs fed off of that. But now going back home, if you're the Brewers, getting that now crowd behind you, I think things settle down. I think the Brewers win this series. They're the better team all season. They've been the better team, I think, for the most part in this series. I think they get the win at home, Game 5. They move on to the LCS. And when you look at later today, Tigers-Mariners in Seattle, Game 5. Look, everything says Tigers, right? Even though they're on the road. You got Tarik Skubal on the mound, take on George Kirby. Big-time pitching advantage in favor of Detroit. We have Skubal's probably going to win his second, not probably, will win his second straight Cy Young Award. 2.21 ERA this season, second to only Paul Skenes. He's been outstanding. George Kirby's been fine, but nowhere near as good as Skubal. I got two reasons though. I will take the Mariners to win this game tonight. Number one, it's just a weird feeling. Again, the Tigers won game four. They go on the road now in game five, go on the play with a lot of momentum with the best pitcher in the AL on the mound for him. A lot of reasons to be optimistic. I have a gut. I just feel like, okay, Mariners, how well they played the second half at home. I think they're going to go back, take this series, winning game five. The other thing is, this is the more tangible reason why I think they'll win. Look, they are not afraid of Skubal. Tarks faced them three times this year. The Tigers are 0-3 in those three games. And it's the numbers aren't eye-popping because Skubal's been so good. But in those three games that he's faced the Mariners, he's pitched, and I'm going to say only here just because this is more of a credit to how good he's been in terms of shutting guys down, but also shutting teams down, but also to how long he's or how well he's been able to consistently go deep into games. In three games, only only gone 17 2/3 innings. So he's averaging less than six innings a start. Has allowed 9 runs and 15 hits over those 17 2/3 innings. The Mariners, despite how confident Detroit is with having the best pitcher in the AL, going on the bump for an elimination game later today, the Mariners aren't going to be intimidated. This guy they've seen now for the fourth time. I know you could say, look, all things even outright, water finds its level. Detroit 0-3 in starts that Skubal's made against the Mariners. Eventually, with how good of a pitcher he is, he's going to, you know, finally get on the right side of that and get a win. I think Seattle squeaks out. I'm going to say a 2-1 win at home, and they go on to face the Blue Jays in the ALCS. So give me the Mariners to win game five tonight. Give me the Brewers to win game five at home tomorrow night to set up what I think will be two really, really good CS series in playoff baseball. 888-710-4ISN. It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Writer Than You. When we return, let's break down some of these big-time college football matchups we have in week number seven. It's a really, really strong college football weekend, including, I think there's a theme for this weekend. The theme is going to be separating the men from the boys. I'll tell you which matchups I think we'll be able to show that after we get this latest sports update from Andrew Bogusch.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Ryan, the Sports Flash is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Your small business keeps you on the go. Progressive Commercial Insurance keeps your policy within reach with our easy-to-use mobile app. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. The Giants don't usually beat the Eagles or the other NFC East teams, and they usually don't win in primetime, but they did all of those things last night, dropping Philly 34-17. Jackson Dart threw for a score, ran for another. Fellow rookie Cam Scannaboo scoring three times on the ground.
The franchise has been a losing franchise the last couple years, but that's not who we are right now. We need to continue to build and build and build each and every day and have these guys with positive mindsets and, you know, get away from that losing mindset.
Brian Burns had two sacks for a defense that pitched a second-half shutout, including two fourth-quarter takeaways. It wasn't any better for Phillies baseball team reliever Orion Kirkery, allowing the season-ending run to score the throwing error. A 2-1 loss in 11 at Dodger Stadium. The Cubs, meanwhile, extended their division series with a 6-0 home win over the Brewers. Five pitchers combining for that shutout. And Matthew Schaefer, the top pick in the last NHL draft, with an assist in his debut, but he and the Islanders lost in Pittsburgh 4-3. I'm Andrew Bogusch.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Buy or sell, you believe at any time in his life, Kawhi Leonard has ever planted a tree.
Sell.
I agree. Buy or sell that if, in fact, this is true, the Clippers have committed against their fellow teams treason.
Buy. On the Infinity Sports Network.
It's Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Writer Than You to this day. Look, I've not been here that long. I used to work with Bill back when he was working the 6 to 10 p.m. Eastern show a few years ago. But still, it's not been that long. That is my favorite pun Bill's ever had. The treason one, the timing, the quickness of it, the delivery. It's still my favorite so far that he has said on this show. A plus there from Bill, who will be back on Monday, back from Paris to tell us all about it. Very excited about that. Before we get to a quick college football week 7 preview here, in which the men will separate themselves from the boys. Speaking of which, we have seen that in the Rider Than You Survivor Pool, where we start with 44, We entered week six with 7. And we go into Sunday of week six down to 4. Because Bettis 3636, which I believe is our good friend Chris in Lexington, took the Eagles. Bill Lefter took the Eagles. D and the TUC took the Eagles. And now, after the Giants' upset victory, after that dominant performance by New York last night, those three gentlemen have been eliminated, and we are left with Bills Mafia 760, farming to victory 307, Josh Allen to the Bears, and OU analytics nerd L's. Those are who we have left in the Rider Than You Survivor Pool, where, as a reminder, I'm sure you know, but just in case you don't, the winner gets the name Bum of the Week. We could have that by next Friday. This thing could be done from 44 down to 1 in just 6 weeks. Now, let me say this, because we did have a tweet, and I apologize who tweeted me asking this question. So I think it was Skipper Tim, but if I'm mistaken there, my apologies, not trying to disrespect you. My memory is nowhere near what it used to be, which is a whole different discussion for a different day. According to, I was the one who set this up on Yahoo. According to Yahoo and the rules I was able to look up, if everyone loses on the same week, then I think what they say is that whoever's left splits the pot, right? We're not obviously playing for money. So let's just say all 7 people left, and we already had 3 out. So all 4 remaining in Sunday lose, and all 4 of their picks made. Then I believe the default Yahoo Survivor Pool football rules are that all 7 would quote-unquote split the pot. I was looking at the settings this week after I was alerted to what happens if there's a tie. Unless I'm mistaken, I don't have the ability as the creator to change the tiebreaker rules. There's no option for me to include a tiebreaker, to do anything about a tiebreaker. So we have to do this thing on our own. Jailbreak a little bit here. We'll see how this week goes. But if there ever is a tie, unless you say there's 3 people left and all 3 lose, we may continue. Well, actually, it's up to Bill. We'll see what Bill wants. But an option could be, we have their emails, send them an email, we do it on the side, and we keep on going until one person is left. Ties be damned. We'll see what Bill wants to do. If he wants to have 3 Bum of the Weeks, if he wants to do just 1, it'll be up to Bill. But right now, we are down to 4. Bills Mafia 760, farming to victory 307, Josh Allen to the Bears, OU analytics nerd L's. Best of luck. They are the 4 left in the Survivor, or in the Rider Than You Survivor Pool. That's right, Bill, in case you're just listening and missed Monday's show, Bill took the Cardinals last week. 2 big ones that eliminated a lot of people. Rams, Cardinals. So at least the good news is we collectively, the 44 of us, or I guess 43 of us, others, will not be Bums of the Week because Bill's out. Let's go. Love that. All right. 10 minutes from now, Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered will join the show, preview this weekend in college football. He's actually on his way as we speak to Dallas for Red River, OU, Texas. A lot of storylines around that game. But I don't want to start there. I told you before, this is a weekend in college football where we start to separate the men's from the we start to separate the men from the boys. The reason why I say that is there are 2 matchups I'm looking at specifically. I have a lot of eyes on them. I think we're going to really know what some of these teams are about. Are they legitimate contenders or are they pretenders? First game I want to talk about here, Oregon, Indiana. Number 3 Ducks hosting the number 7 Indiana Hoosiers. Look, in order to take Indiana seriously, they've played really well so far this season. They're blowing everyone out. We need to see them compete. I'm not saying beat Oregon on the road in Austin. That's a very difficult task. We need to see them, though, compete. Make this a game in the fourth quarter. Have it, you know, have the outcome be anything but decided in the second half. Because so far to this point under Kirk Cignetti, there is no doubt Indiana is a very good college football team. They are 16-2 under Sig. And we saw them against a top 10 team in Illinois at the time they played them a few weeks ago. They took the Illini to the woodshed and beat them 63-10. So we know Indiana's good. They can beat bad to average to, I would say, Illinois was pretty good. Can they take that next step to be a legitimate contender? Can they now beat, or again, compete with the elites in college football? Right now, going into week 7, there are 3 elite teams in college football. It's Ohio State, it's Oregon, and Miami, no order. Actually, that's probably the order I put it in. Ohio State, Oregon, Miami. This is Indiana's chance to get themselves closer to that elite group and prove they belong. Because last year, I fought hard for Indiana to make the playoff. And I don't think the committee made a mistake. I think Indiana rightfully made it. But we saw Indiana fatten up on a lot of bad competition last year. Blow out a lot of bad teams. The 2 teams they played that were elite teams, Ohio State in the regular season, Notre Dame in the college football playoff, were not relatively close. That was truly men amongst boys. This is now Indiana's first shot this season to prove those boys last year got tougher and are closer to men than they were last year. This is a test to see truly where Indiana is. They are no doubt a very good team. They're no doubt a college football playoff team. This is one where if they can compete, we'll start talking about them as a national championship contending team, even if they don't find a way to beat Oregon, but it's close. They lose 34-31. They lose 27-24. They lose 27-20, but it's back and forth. They can, I think, really put themselves on the map with this game, as can the number 14 Missouri Tigers. Bills Tigers, who host number 8 Alabama this week. You hear this from coaches a lot, especially in college football. They want their guys playing like hungry dogs, right? That are out there relentlessly chasing their prey and looking and are desperate for a meal because they are starving and need to eat. Well, we're quickly going to find out on Saturday whether Missouri's a hungry dog or if they're a team that's just fattened up on bad competition and too lazy to move. Mizzou has been outstanding this year. Their running back, Ahmad Hardy, number 1 in college football in terms of rushing yards. Mizzou, top 7 in both scoring offense and total offense. They're one of the few teams that have a top 10 scoring offense, scoring defense. Their defense, number 2 in pressure rate, number 3 in third down stops. But that's come against competition that's been so far Central Arkansas, Kansas, Louisiana, South Carolina, UMass. Their strength of schedule so far through the first 5 games is 108th in the country. Is Mizzou legit? Or are they merely doing what we saw Indiana do last year? Beat up on a bad schedule. Just like Indiana, I don't think Mizzou has to win this game to prove they're legit. They need, though, to compete with Alabama for 4 quarters and show they belong. Men amongst boys weekend here for Mizzou and for Indiana and their big matchups against Alabama and Oregon, respectively. To talk more about those games and also Oklahoma, Texas, we welcome Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered next as he's joined me, Ryan Hickey, in for Bill on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
And welcome on into Writer Than You on this glorious Friday morning. It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Thank you for starting your Friday morning with us right here. Hopefully we're getting off to a good start. Very excited to welcome on our next guest, a guy who I really enjoy talking ball with, a man who is so dedicated to the sport. He is, I don't want to put him on the outs here, but maybe breaking the law, talking and driving the same time as he's on his way to Dallas for OU Texas. It is SEC Unfiltered host, Cole Thompson. Cole, what's up, stud?
Hickey, I had to pull over because I want to make sure that I was fully convinced, locked in this interview. And yeah, you're right. I mean, like, trust me, I don't need to be going 98 miles an hour and losing my mind over some of your hot takes. So let's just be safe, smart, pull it on over, let you go ahead and get your feelings out. Dude, we got the separation Saturday in college football that I'm excited for. And it's not just in the SEC, it's in the Big Ten. We got ACC matchups. Who's going to take on Texas Tech in the Big 12? I mean, like, let's be real. This has been a fun season so far. This is where we get down to the nuts and bolts of what makes this season unique.
This is why I love having you on, because we think, and it's probably not good for you, think in a lot of the same ways. You call it separation Saturday. I just was before calling it, you know, a men amongst boys Saturday. See who really is a contender, who is not. We'll get some of those games in our seconds. I think it's fair to say, at least from the Oklahoma perspective, they're a contender. But this week, Cole, between tips from Chipotle tortilla rollers, We have reporters hiding in bushes outside the stadium trying to get an update. Everyone wants to know what's the latest on John Mateer's surgically repaired thumb. Will he be ready to play in Red River? We got a report from ESPN last night that he's listed as probable. So it seems like, Cole, he's going to play, but still 2 weeks after surgery on his right throwing hand. How effective, by the time game time comes tomorrow, do you expect John Mateer to be in this game?
Yeah, Hickey, it's incredible. I've actually found out more information between the separation of the Cole Kidman and Keith Urban that I have on John Mateer's status throughout the week. So that's how much you know that they're keeping everything under wraps in Norman. He is going to be able to go, I think, in some capacity. You know, there had been rumors that he had been at least trying to work his way back up as a rusher. And the thing about Ben Arbuckle's offense that makes it so dynamic is the quarterback has to be able to trust his legs as much as his arm. But when you look at this Texas team, even though they were embarrassed offensively against Florida last week in Gainesville, they still have a top 15 scoring defense. They still have one of the best run defenses in college football. They have players in the back end that can make you pay if you have underthrown passes. So it's going to be really important for him to have his hand in his throwing motion in a certain degree. You know, you could go ahead and snap it on up with as much ibuprofen or morphine as possible, but if he can't grip the football, it's going to limit his capabilities as a passer, and it's going to make offenses one-dimensional. So I do believe we will see him play in this game. I'm not sure if he's going to be the full-time starter. You know, they've been going through reps with Michael Hawkins. Talked to somebody recently, and he told me that Hawkins feels more complimentary and I think a little bit more confident in his play style underneath Ben Arbuckle than what he was dealing with last season with Seth Luttrell. And it does help that you have a better offensive line and that the wide receivers are all staying healthy this year. But that doesn't mean that you want to trust number three versus number 10. I mean, when Mateer was in the starting lineup, Oklahoma had a Heisman-caliber quarterback and felt like maybe the best quarterback in the SEC. So there's going to be, I think, some plays designed for Mateer to come on in. I think that we are going to see more Michael Hawkins, though. Just because if your list is probable doesn't mean your list is start. And so that, I think, is going to be the key element here, is that you are going to see John Mateer play. I would say if you put the betting over at 12 snaps, I would maybe take the under and say 10 to 11 is probably what we're looking at.
Interesting. All right, we're talking SEC Unfiltered host Cole Thompson on his way to Red River, Texas OU tomorrow, 2:30 Central Time kickoff from the Texas State Fair. Let me ask you this, because I'm glad you pulled over, because this is maybe a hot take here. I'm curious your thoughts on. Is it a hot take to say Oklahoma doesn't need John Mateer in order to beat Texas tomorrow?
Not a hot take. I mean, I've heard 25,000 more that are more terrible from you, so not even close to being in your top 10. I do think that there is a part about Red River that people always sleep on, and it's the fact that this is a game that means more to the fans, it means more to the universities, and it means more to the players than it actually does toward the standings of the college football postseason picture. I mean, there are players that grew up in the state of Texas that did not get an offer from the flagship university, and they had to go to Oklahoma as a secondary option. There are players that grew up in the greater Dallas-Fort Worth area that remember their time at State Fair watching these two teams meet in what I consider to be the greatest venue in college football on a Saturday afternoon in October. And you got to remember that these are two fan bases that I think truly invoke the best version of college football to its finest. I mean, you get up at 7 in the morning and you already see a bunch of Sooner fans drinking some moonshine, getting ready to go walk on into the Cotton Bowl. And you see a bunch of Longhorn fans drinking some Shiner Bock, ready to go ahead and go to war. And it's split right down the middle on either side. So for 30 minutes, it's a home game. For 30 minutes, it is the dauntingest, most treacherous, road-hostile environment that you could be a part of. And crazy things happen in this rivalry. I mean, yeah. I go back to the 2018 game where we watched as Sam Ellinger out-dueled Heisman Trophy winner Kyler Murray, and Dicker the Kicker became an infamous call by Gus Johnson. I mean, like that's what we're so accustomed to seeing in this matchup. So even if John Mateer does play, I don't know if Oklahoma can beat Texas just because of Texas needs this win, and at some point you got to realize you're Texas. You're the flagship university of the biggest state in the union outside of Alaska. You bring in five-star talent left and right. You are a name that people look at as a future day one NFL talent, and that comes on the offensive line, that comes at wide receiver, that comes on the defensive side, that comes at everything outside of Arch Manning, and then it is Arch Manning. And honestly, Hickey, I think this is going to be Arch's best game because what the stakes are for this matchup. And so everything is going to be topsy-turvy crazy, I think, tomorrow. I do think Oklahoma wins this football game, but I think that we're going to, like the over-under, this is maybe my hot take. The over-under is currently set at 43.5. I'm hammering the over. I think we're going to get something along the lines of 31-28 final score. Like, this is going to be a performance where we feel the confidence of Arch Manning come through, but Oklahoma just has enough to get the job done.
And this, to me, Cole, feels like no matter who wins the game, it's always high scoring. No matter who's playing well, who's not, this feels like this game always, every year, is two offenses high flying, and there's a lot of fireworks and points on the board.
It's a great game. It, to me, every single year is the epitome of what college football is. And I tell people, you got to go to a whiteout game. You've experienced it. You got to go to the zoo out in Austin Stadium. You got to go to the game between Ohio State and Michigan. If you have an opportunity to go indulge in a fried bacon-wrapped turkey leg while also playing boardwalk games, and then walk on in literally 10 feet over and see the greatest rivalry in a neutral site field, it is on a bucket list for every college football fan. I truly ask you, if you have any chance to come to Texas, make sure you come on the weekend that Red River is being played out in Dallas.
Could not agree more. On my list for sure. I hope to get out there. I'm very jealous you will be there this weekend as well, covering that game, as we're talking to Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered. Follow Cole, and we'll say his good takes on Twitter at Mr. Cole Thompson. The appetizer, if you want to say this is OU Texas tomorrow, the main dish in the SEC, the appetizer. I'm very excited for it. Alabama at Mizzou. Mizzou's looked really good. But as you know, Cole, they've not played anyone so far. Is Mizzou good enough? Can they, on a separation Saturday, as you said, can they separate themselves into the contender category or more pretender? And we're going to talk about them as a team that more fattened up against bad competition so far the first 6 weeks of the season.
See, that's the part that always drives me crazy, is fans are like, well, who have they played? Who have they played? And number one, you can't help who is on your schedule, but how you look in those games, I think, truly does factor into what type of team you are. And Mizzou's looked elite defensively. I mean, they have a top five scoring defense. They're number two in the nation, only behind Oklahoma in total yards allowed. They've eliminated rushing attacks this year. I mean, Daniel Highshaw and Jalen Daniels in that Kansas game averaged 0.6 yards a play. They didn't allow 100 rushing yards to South Carolina. They didn't allow 100 rushing yards to Louisiana. So they're a very solid defense that gets after the quarterback. They're top 10 in the nation right now in pressure rate, top 10 in tackles for losses, and top 15 in sacks. Damon Wilson has been as advertised. And what's funny is he would have been the number one pass rusher at Georgia. Now he's killing it out in Como. So they're going to put, I think, Alabama in a position where it is going to be a long, hard-fought game, and I think that Mizzou deserves the national attention. You know, Eli Drinkwitz is the third most winningest coach currently in the SEC behind Kirby Smart and Josh Heupel since 2023. Back-to-back 10-win seasons. There's an opportunity for him to continuously build Mizzou up to a spot where they are going to be a threat, I think, for the long haul in the SEC. The thing that I worry about when it comes to Mizzou is I think I know who they are offensively, and that is Ahmad Hardy, Jamal Roberts, Bo Pabula, all boot scooting and booging on a dance floor like Brooks and Dunn, and they make plays, but they can't finalize opportunities to strike in the red zone. I think that Alabama is this team that, after last week, watching as Jam Miller became the first running back since 2023 to hit 100 rushing yards in an SEC matchup for the Crimson Tide, they're reaching a new gear offensively that is going to be on display. And that, to me, I think is ultimately going to be the difference in this matchup. I think Alabama wins and covers, but, you know, for most seasons, and this may be one of my hot takes, I think that when you look currently, the matchup against Vanderbilt was challenging because it was the rebuttal game after last year. It's Georgia, you're going into Athens, it's a place that's very challenging to win. Me, personally, from a schematic standpoint, I think Missouri is the toughest game on Alabama's schedule this year because the strengths of Mizzou are negatives towards Alabama. And the negatives towards Alabama, if they show up at an 11 a.m. kick, that might be the nail in the coffin that gives the biggest upset of 2025 so far.
Oh, I like you're talking to Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered. Cole, a man who knows a lot about college football, not just in the SEC, but all across the nation. Let's go out west here, Cole. Another separation Saturday here for Indiana, seventh ranked in the country. They take on number three Oregon. Look, last year we saw Indiana under Kirk Cinetti play really well, and then the two big boys out on their schedule, Ohio State and Notre Dame, I would say for the most part thoroughly dominated them. Do we see a different Indiana team this Saturday in Autzen, or is it kind of more the same when it comes to playing elite competition, Indiana just not there yet?
No, I don't think that you can say, like, if Indiana finds a way to lose this game, how they lose is going to tell more about where they rank among the teams as contenders for a college football playoff berth than anything else. And ultimately, I think that is what's going to be the case. But I personally think that this Indiana team is miles better than last year's Indiana team. And that was an Indiana team that went 11-1. And they're going to have the opportunity to kind of show the college football playoff committee that a 10-2, maybe and even an 11-1 that people say, well, look at their schedule. It's how they win these games or how they play in these matchups is truly going to show on up. Fernando Mendoza has played at Austin Stadium before, so that, I think, gives you a slight edge in certain ways because he understands the environment. And both of these defensive lines are great. I mean, Bear Alexander has been a blessing, I think, for the front seven for Oregon. And then you look at the overall consistency of what you got in Indiana. Both these teams are top 10 in run defense, and both these teams are top 10 in red zone defense. So they're going to make life hell for Dante Moore and Fernando Mendoza. They're going to take away the rushing attack. And I think ultimately that's where I trust Will Stein and Dante Moore a little bit more than I trust Kirk Cignetti and Fernando Mendoza when it comes to play calling. Mm-hmm. Because Will Stein, I think, is going to be able to dial up a couple of schemes. Let's Dante Moore find a DeCorian Moore downfield, find a Trey Benson, find a Sadiq, King and Sadiq across the middle of the field that gets you the opportunities to where the passing attack is a little bit more potent, where Indiana, they may need to rely heavily on the run to set up the play-action pass downfield to Elijah Surratt and Amari and Oman Cooper. So that, to me, is where we're going to see the separation between these two in terms of who is where in the pecking order of the Big Ten. I think you walk away respecting Indiana as a team that could at least make the college football playoff. I think you walk away knowing that Oregon this year is once again going to be a threat to hoist up the national title down in South Beach. I got Oregon winning and covering, but it is a four-quarter game. It takes the last drive, I think, for Oregon to go ahead and punch this thing in and put the nail in the coffin.
Which, you know, if that's the case, Cole, I think it's a huge win for Indiana. And I would feel very bullish about them going forward here as like a legit contender. Like I said, like that's, I mean, we saw last year against Ohio State and Notre Dame, they weren't really competitive. The final score may say otherwise a little bit, especially against the Notre Dame game, and they scored some garbage time touchdowns late.
Stop.
If you could take Oregon to four quarters, that would be a big time win here for Sig and the boys down there in Indiana. We're talking to Cole Thompson, SEC Unfiltered. Cole, let me ask you this here to finish off. We've talked about a few games, right? But this is a loaded, a great college football slate from start to finish here in week number 7. Is there a game you have an eye on? Is there an upset special we should keep an eye out for here that you're kind of feeling that could shock a lot of people when the weekend comes to a conclusion?
I got three games we need to talk about. Number one, hammer the over in Tennessee and Arkansas. Mm. Bobby P, back on the sidelines, back in Fayetteville. Here's the funny part, Iggy. The last time that Bobby Petrino was running the show out in Arkansas, Arkansas was the top five team. They were on the come up. They were viewed as the next big threat in the SEC. And then he took a little bit of a ride with the Harley Davidson and the 20-year-old, and that's where everything hit the fan. And ultimately, Arkansas became the laughingstock of the conference. Now he's back in the saddle. This is the number one scoring offense, though, in the SEC in Tennessee. We're going to see fireworks, I think, out in Neyland. I also think that we're going to see a game go down to the wire between NC State and Notre Dame. Ooh. I like CJ Bailey a lot. I think that you really look at Dave Duren right now. He's facing a little bit of pressure to get that signature win because the Wolfpack have always been, in my opinion, the epitome of tier two in the ACC. Never good enough to get to Charlotte. Never bad enough to really miss a bowl game outside of last year. CJ Bailey has come on really strong. If you can slow down the rushing attack into Darian Price and Jeremiah Love, I think this could be a very interesting four-quarter battle. And the last game that we got to talk about, it's tonight. It's out in Denton, Texas. It's North Texas versus South Florida. Ladies and gentlemen, the Group of Five is still wide open. Ryan Silverfield and Memphis feel like the front runners, but Tulane showed you last night that they're susceptible to potentially losing. I think that USF, with what we've seen from Eric Morris and his offense, they may be susceptible to losing to the Mean Green out in Denton. It's a 5-0 roster that's looking to prove that they belong in the conversation to go to the college football playoff. They got a quarterback that's averaging 217 yards per game, one turnover, and they're exceptional in the red zone. If I am the head guys in Stillwater, Oklahoma right now, I'm looking at Eric Morris and Alex Dolas. Whoever wins this game might be getting the Oklahoma State job.
This is why we're Brian Cole Thompson. Excellent analysis as always. Make sure to listen to him, SEC Unfiltered. Follow him and his great takes on Twitter at Mr. Cole Thompson. Cole, drive safe to Dallas. Be aware of those Texas drivers and enjoy the game tomorrow. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes here.
Hickey, reminder, you're playing at home. You have to win this one. You can't blame the road test.
Cole, it technically may be home. Let me tell you this. The first three and out Penn State has, it will not be a home game for the Nittany Lions. The Boo Birds will be out. Those Philly fans, especially coming off yesterday, are going to be in a certain mood. Oh, boy. This is my only hope, Cole. I hope I'm not watching this game in the second half because it's such a blowout. That's what it should be. I don't know if we're going to get that. I'm nervous.
You're going to be watching this game until the fourth quarter. No. I'll talk to you later, Hickey.
No doubt about it. We always appreciate Cole and his insight. Thank you so much for hopping on here. He, again, will be in Dallas for Red River, OU, Texas, 3:30 Eastern kick, which, by the way, sidebar, side note, I am a traditionalist when it comes to college football. I think that's a lot of the traditions are what make the sport unique. I am also someone who hates noon games, who despises, as a Penn State fan, big noon kickoff, what Fox has done to taking away some of the best environments in the Big Ten and all of college football and watering it down because they put the biggest games of the year in the conference at noon Eastern or 11 a.m. Central, depending on where you are. And, you know, for example, Illinois this week hosting Ohio State, 11 a.m. local kick, instead of night games where you can have some of the best environments show off. With that said, just someone who despises noon Eastern, I'm a traditionalist first and foremost. OU Texas has always traditionally been played at noon Eastern, 11 local. It is criminal. That game is kicking off 2:30 local. Sure, the fans will appreciate it because you don't have to wake up at 4 a.m. and start boozing. You can wake up at 7 a.m. and start boozing. That should be 11 a.m. Central, noon Eastern kickoff every single year. Just like Ohio State, Michigan, always at noon Eastern, the last Saturday of the regular season. Some of those games, those traditions, right in the middle of Texas State Fair, that's what it should be. 3:30 for Red River, to me, is just very bizarre. Don't like it. Anyway, move on. Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Writer Than You. When we return, we'll do a little buy or sell, including we will discuss whether we could see a big road upset in the NFL. That is next right here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
When you come into the National Football League, it's almost a Benjamin Button reality. I've never seen that movie. I don't know why I'm doing a Benjamin. Do you ever watch Ben? What a dumb concept. You age backwards.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Writer Than You. Before we get to buy or sell, I want to remind you that eBay is home to millions of finds, and each one becomes part of your story. From your favorite vintage band tee to the dream car you've been searching for, it's all there. eBay. Things people love. Well, if you're a LeBron hater, I guess you're going to love this. Lakers announced this week that LeBron James could miss the next 3 or 4 weeks as he's dealing with sciatica. That's right. One of the fittest and impressive just physical athletes we've ever seen in our lifetime. He's dealing with some leg pain like you and I do. Sciatica. Gets everyone. LeBron could miss opening night, October 21st, when they do face the Warriors here. If this does go the full length, he has not yet practiced in a training camp, whether practice or a preseason scrimmage, because of this sciatica, again, going through the back and the glutes. LeBron James, one of us. All right, it is time for Buy or Sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
So it's Ryan Hickey in for Bill on this Friday, which means Jack Carty is in for me. What we got, Jack?
All right, Ryan, starting off with Oklahoma quarterback John Mateer is listed as probable for Saturday's Red River game against Texas, as you mentioned earlier. Mateer had surgery on his right thumb 2 weeks ago after breaking a bone during the Auburn game. Ryan, buy or sell, Mateer will be effective on Saturday.
I'm going to sell, and here's why. I'm nervous of what Cole Thompson, who we just had on, was talking about, because how he predicted, because right now John Mateer, as you just mentioned, is listed as probable. He played with that broken bone in his thumb against Auburn for most of the game. What I'm nervous about is if he's only going to play, as Cole Thompson projected, 12 plays, 13 plays, somewhere in that range. So it's going to be, hey, you're going to run on for a play or two, run off. Run on for a play or two, run off. I don't know many players, especially quarterbacks, that can thrive and succeed when it's stop, start, stop, start. One play here, then like five off. One play there, then like seven off. Two plays in a row, maybe, but then you sit out for the next 10. I don't love that. So I'm going to say even though he plays, like, is he going to throw for 300 yards? Is he going to throw for 250? I'm going to say no. I don't think Oklahoma needs Mateer in order to be Texas, because I think Oklahoma can rely on their defense to give Arch Manning that offense complete hell. But I don't think when it's all said and done, we're going to see a signature performance from John Mateer. I don't think it'll be very effective in Red River tomorrow afternoon.
All right, so moving on, still continuing the college football talk. There's only one top 10 matchup in college football this weekend as number 7 Indiana travels to number 3 Oregon. Last time out, the Ducks beat your Penn State Nittany Lions in double overtime, while Indiana squeaked by Iowa on the road. Oregon is favored by 7.5 points. Ryan, buy or sell, Oregon will win and cover the spread.
I'm going to buy this, Jack.
Buy.
Maybe I'm just selling Indiana short. And I like Kirk Cignetti. I'm rooting for them to compete, and I want to see that program succeed. I think this could be a bludgeon. And one of the things that I'm worried about here is, I was looking this up, Oregon's offensive line outweighs Indiana's defensive line by about 50 pounds. We talked about men amongst boys. If your defensive line is that small and you can't stop the push from the Oregon offensive line, which means Oregon's going to be able to run the ball downhill effectively and consistently, and then all of a sudden that allows Dante Moore to open up the play action game and hit DeCorian Moore, who is a super talented freshman wide receiver, I don't know if Indiana's going to be. Even with how well their offense has been playing and Fernando Mendoza is outstanding as Indiana's quarterback, that level of physicality that Oregon can bring and the size advantage they have over Indiana, I don't know how the Hoosiers are able to keep this close on the road, in which Oregon right now currently has the longest home winning streak in college football with 18 straight wins at Autzen Stadium. I think Oregon wins. They win by at least a touchdown. I think they could win by 3 touchdowns, Jack. I think it could be ugly here, so I will buy Oregon wins and covers this game.
All right. Moving on to the National Football League. The Browns still haven't named the backup quarterback for Dillon Gabriel as they take on the Steelers this Sunday. It is between Shedeur Sanders and Bailey Zappe. Hickey, buy or sell, Browns will have Shedeur Sanders as the backup QB this weekend.
I'm going to sell.
Sell.
I don't think they are, because if you're waiting this long to name the backup quarterback, that to me says you are desperate to name anybody but the obvious guy the backup quarterback for this game. And Bogus referenced it yesterday when he was talking about the quarterback situation for the Browns. And he referenced an Ian Rappaport report from last week that basically said the Browns are hesitant to make Shedeur Sanders the backup quarterback because they don't want to put him in a bad spot to where if Dillon Gabriel, God forbid, gets hurt in the first quarter, well, they're planning for a Dillon Gabriel game plan and Shedeur will come in and have to run that offense, whereas they'd rather have Shedeur be the third string quarterback, and when they know Dillon Gabriel's not going to play the week before, then make him the starter so that way they have a full week to game plan for Shedeur. I call BS on that. And the biggest reason is because look at how Shedeur Sanders and Dillon Gabriel play. Outside of one being a lefty and one being a righty, there's no difference. They are the same quarterback. They're both somewhat athletic, but they are not going to win games based on their athleticism. We saw last night Jackson Dart run around and make plays with his legs. Neither one of those guys are making plays with their leg. They can, if the protection breaks down, scramble on a 3rd and 7, right? It's like Baker Mayfield. But are the Browns calling designed runs for Dillon Gabriel? No, they're not. If Shedeur Sanders is quarterback, are they calling designed runs for Shedeur Sanders? No, they're not. Both guys are get it out of their hands quick. Both guys are known for their accuracy, don't have outstanding arms, right? They're supposed to be quick processors. They, again, outside of literally throwing the ball from different hands, they're the same quarterback. Shador's a little bit bigger than Dillon Gabriel. It's also impossible to be smaller than Gabriel with how, you know, slight of stature he is. So I don't buy that, because your game plan for Shedeur, your game plan for Dillon Gabriel is the same. So I think for me, this is just the Browns not believing in Shedeur Sanders, not wanting to draft him, getting forced to draft him by the owner, and not believing he's ready to go. They're going to name Bailey Zappe the backup, and Shedeur is going to be, even with the trade of Joe Flacco, going to be third string when they line up and get set to play the Steelers on Sunday in Pittsburgh.
The Browns quarterback carousel continues to go round and round and round. It just will never end. Okay, the Lions head to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. The Lions have been red hot since their week one loss in the Packers, winning four straight games while owning the highest scoring offense in the NFL. The Chiefs still are 2.5-point favorites. Hickey, buy or sell, Lions will pull off the road upset.
Bye, Jack. Two in a row for, I think, Detroit and Kansas City. Look, the Chiefs are not dead, and if they lose this game, which I think they will, it'd be 2-4, and I'm sure a lot of people will talk about the sky falling. KC, so far through the first 5 weeks of the season, they have been a team where they haven't been able to put both sides of the ball together. Right, early in the season, their offense has been struggling. Defense played well, but the offense, you know, can't score consistently, and they lose games like they did to the Eagles 20-17. Well, Monday night, they finally got their offense going. They scored 28 points. It's a pretty good outburst right now for, you know, how banged up the Chiefs' offense is and how ineffective it's been at times. But with the offense going, the defense allowed 31 points. So right now, this Chiefs team is just out of whack. They're not unable to marry their offense with their defense. And like you said, I mean, this Detroit offense right now is humming. Where, boy, oh, boy, a lot of us are wrong after what we saw week one in Green Bay with how bad they looked. They have been elite since. I think that point barrage they've been on since week number one continues. I think they go in there, they beat the Chiefs, and people are raving about Detroit and how back they are and how the NFC North goes through Detroit once again. When they go into Arrowhead Sunday night, pull off the win, lock it up. Lions beat the Chiefs.
And now we're going to transition from the National Football League to Major League Baseball with the divisional series still going on. There are two games that are going to a Game 5 as the Mariners host the Tigers later today. And the Brewers head home after losing two straight to host the Cubs on Saturday night. Ryan, buy or sell, both home teams will win their respective Game 5.
Buy.
Buy.
Even though Tarik Skubal is going for the Mariners and he is the best pitcher in the AL, he will win his second straight Cy Young. I just got a good feeling, a gut feeling, if you will, about the Mariners here. Even though they're losing the pitching battle, I think they do enough to fight, scratch, claw, get a low-scoring 2-1 victory at home to move on. And I do like the Brewers. Brewers right now have been hot at home, bad on the road. Good thing for them, they're in Milwaukee for game number 5. I think they find a way to win. I think both home teams here in game 5 win and move on.
And last but certainly not least for this edition of Buy or Sell, as you mentioned before, ESPN reported yesterday that LeBron James will miss 3 to 4 weeks because of sciatica. James hasn't had a full practice yet during training camp and is expected to miss the season opener on October 21st versus the Warriors. Ryan, buy or sell, LeBron will play in at least 65 games this season.
I'm going to sell.
Sell.
Well, like, he has been healthy the last 2 years. He's played in at least 70 games in each of the last two seasons. So he broke a trend where he was missing a significant chunks of time with the Lakers when he first signed. There was like 25 games he's missed in, I think it was like 4 of the first 5 years in LA. But he's been healthy now the last 2 years. With that said, he's turning 41 in December. And usually, right, for LeBron, with his offseason training regimen and his, you know, the way he treats his body, the beginning of the year is when he's the healthiest, when he's the freshest, ready to go. Now, already we're talking about sciatica, which a lot of people deal with. We all have lower back pain. We all don't feel great. If you're dealing with that now, and you're supposed to be your healthiest, number one, that's not going to go away as you play a grind of an 82-game season with guys, you know, hitting you left and right. You're falling down on the hardwood floor hundreds of times in the season. That's not going to get any better. And so now we're already talking about him being hurt at the healthiest point. He should have missed that many regular season games. Like, expected maybe, you know, those bleeds into the first week or so of the regular season. But still, I don't think he's going to be playing in 65 games this year. I think we're going to see LeBron James, unfortunately, be more on the shelf and unavailable than available this season as he plays what I would probably say is his last in LA. Probably not the last of his career. He's going to have some sort of retirement tour, so he's not going to hang it up after this unless injuries, God forbid, prevent that from happening, prevent him from playing. But at least this season, don't think we'll see LeBron James for 65 games. I will sell. All right. That is Buy or Sell right here on Rider Than You, as it is Ryan Hickey in for Bill on this Friday. I am very excited because I can do actually for real for the first time. Buy or sell and no repercussions, no bum of the week attachments to the week after. We get to do real buy or sell. We got a lot of deserving candidates. You will hear the winner after we get the latest sports update from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
And this update sponsored by Prize Picks. Football is heating up, and so is the hard-hitting action on Prize Picks. Download Prize Picks and use code PRIMETIME and get $50 in bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. It seemed like a get-right game to many, but the Eagles kept struggling with a 34-17 loss at the 1-4 Giants on Thursday Night Football. Philly didn't score after halftime. Special teams struggled, and cornerback Quinyon Mitchell left early with a hamstring injury. But head coach Nick Sirianni remains optimistic.
Love the guys that we have. Love the coaches that we have. Obviously, this group of guys and group of coaches have, you know, been to the top of the mountain, been to, you know, playoffs, and figure out ways, and I know we can figure out ways to get this thing rolling.
34 points, the most the Giants have scored against the Eagles since 2012. The outburst, including four combined rushing scores from Jackson Dart and Cam Scataboo. And the Cubs forcing a fifth and final game in Milwaukee tomorrow with a 6-0 win at Wrigley last night. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Welcome back into Writer Than You. It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill on this Friday. Very excited to be with you here. Want to remind you that this NASCAR race preview is sponsored by WeatherGuard Truck and Van Equipment. They're just as driven as the hard-working pros they serve. This Sunday, the NASCAR postseason shifts to Las Vegas for the South Point 400. Shane Van Gisbergen, currently in first place right now, is 56 points this postseason. Check him out and check out the NASCAR South Point 400 this Sunday. 5:30 Eastern is when that postseason race does start. So I may have to make myself a Bum of the Week nominee, as Billy Bones Jones does tweet me, Ryan_Hickey3. Are you going to do your first Bum of the Week? You kept saying buy or sell, but you just did that. So I apologize if I was teasing buy or sell next instead of Bum of the Week. Good thing I don't get paid to speak for a living. Otherwise, I think I'd be out of a job. My apologies did not mean for any confusion there. We are doing Bum of the Week right now.
Hallelujah, I'm a bum.
All he's doing is a whole lot of damn nothing.
I'm a bum.
You rotten bum!
I'm a bum.
You're a bunch of bums.
I'm a bum. I'm a bum. I'm a bum.
Who's the bum this week? Let's find out on Writer Than You.
We have a lot of candidates. Let's start with the federal government. This is not, look, I'm sort of half joking here. This is not a political stance, please. See the levity here I'm about to provide. We just talked to Cole Thompson before. Big game in Columbia, Missouri. Number 14 Mizzou hosting number 8 Alabama. This is a game we're going to say, is Mizzou a contender or pretender? Are they a man or are they a boy? Well, unfortunately, some of the pomp and circumstance around that game will no longer be provided. As Mizzou Athletics tweeted this 46 minutes ago, due to the federal government shutdown, Saturday's planned military flyover for Mizzou football has been canceled. What are we canceled? Flyovers are great. The crowd gets jacked up. Whether it's a chopper, a jet, I love a flyover. Oh, my goodness. I'm rarely at games that are big enough to have flyovers. And at least the last few Penn State games I've gone to, for the most part, have been night games. You're not going to do a night game flyover. So I've not seen a flyover a ton. Anytime I do, it's electric goosebumps. Hell, even on TV, they show a flyover and you see the plane or the chopper or the jet, you know, coming in the distance. Oh, I get goosebumps right now just talking about it. Give us the flyover. Get the government back working. Our U.S. government, Bum of the Week nominee for canceling a military flyover for Mizzou football this weekend. Also, Bum of the Week nominee, James Franco. Do I have to say any more? I probably shouldn't, but I will. You lost to UCLA? You didn't have your team prepared to face literally the worst team in the Power Four? This team sucks. They didn't have a lead at any point in the season. going into last week. And what do they do all game? They led. First drive of the game, right down the field. Onside kick, no one's awake. You said, James, from his mouth all week said, this team's going to try a bunch of tricky stuff. They're going to be super aggressive. We're going to be prepared for it. 5 minutes in, onside kick, no one in the zip code. Where was your preparation? That was bad. Losing to Oregon 2 weeks ago, really bad. And you know what, really? Going from number two in the country to unranked in 5 weeks, really bad. Go from national title contender to national dud, really bad. You know what really gets me going, grinds my gears, is post-game, I have to hear James Franklin make excuses as to why they lost to, at the time, going into the game, the worst Power 4 team in college football.
Obviously, we did not handle last week's loss well. We also lost some players in that game during the week. And then everything else. The travel, everything else.
Travel! You know what Oregon did the week before? Oregon went across the country. They stayed an hour outside of State College. They stayed in Altoona, Pennsylvania. They drove an hour on game day to the stadium. Didn't matter. They won the game. Travel to Hollywood. James Franklin, Bell of the Week nominee. As is The Athletic. I am a subscriber to The Athletic. I like the work they do. This article was flat out garbage. So it's not even really Athletic. They publish it, so they're going to get blamed for it. But also Will Leach is one of their authors that wrote this article. I'm going to read you the headline earlier this week. It said, quote, is Arch Manning college football's first flop? And in it was a phrase talking about Arch Manning synonymous with failure. That is not journalism. That is not sports reporting. That is rage bait. That is garbage. I actually hate using the word rage bait because it's so overused. Click, but you're doing it for clicks. You know what? 9 times out of 10, 99% of the time, when people say that's clickbait or you're doing it for clicks, that is garbage. That's an excuse that just they want to say that because they disagree with somebody. But it's fair. At least it's thought out. This is flat out clickbait. This is garbage. This is, let me write something so ridiculous and egregious that you have no choice but to click on it and make me feel good. He wrote, Will Leach, author of The Athletic, when talking about Arch Manning, he is synonymous with failure after 5 games. Arch Manning has started this year 5 games. Now, he's not been bad at all, though, but he's been disappointing, no doubt about it. But remember who built Arch Manning up? Wasn't Texas fans. Wasn't Arch himself talking about how great he's going to be. It was the media. The same people that built him up are now tearing him down after 5 games. The same people that gave him expectations that he didn't want or ask for are now saying not living up to them, so you suck. That's so bad. You know what calls, by the way, when you call someone a flop, that's like conclusive, right? Like, it happened, it's done, you're a flop. We can't write the book yet on Arch Manning. He could get better as the year goes on. He's going to be at Texas next year. He could get better as his career develops. You want to talk about a flop? How about someone like Tate Martell? Remember him? At Ohio State, super highly talented, never panned out. Mitch Mustaine, super highly talented quarterback, never, just completely flamed out. Those guys are flops. And no disrespect, I hate to kind of bring their heads down on a random Friday. Like, those are legit flops. This article about Arch Manning is flat out garbage. Will Leach, Bum of the Week nominee for sure. As is Bill Belichick. What are we doing? Bogey showed a lot of us yesterday. Negotiating your buyout already? Having your players reportedly fight in the locker room? Having your coaches not know what the hell they're doing? Getting outscored by when you play 3 Power 4 teams, 120-33. By the way, those 3 Power 4 teams you played in TCU, UCF, and Clemson are fine. They're not world beaters. They're not Oregon. They're not Ohio State. They're not Miami. Like, he's ruining his legacy for what? Bill Belichick, Bum of the Week nominee, as is Amari DiMercato, running back for the Cardinals. How many more times do you have to see this before you realize, you know what? Maybe I just run through the end zone. How many more idiots are going to drop the ball at the 1 yard line before you realize, you know what? It's not worth it. I'll say this. DiMercato is lucky Jonathan Gannon hit him in the chest. Because most of the conversation this week has been about Jonathan Gannon and his actions. Should he got fined? Should he not have gotten fined? There's been more attention on Jonathan Gannon and his actions after the fumble than DeMercado. Mercado, Fumble of the Week nominee, as A.J. Brown. I'm getting tired of A.J. Brown's act. Look, he's upset that the Eagles are winning, but he's not getting the ball. He's causing distractions while not providing solutions. Then, I don't have time to play, so I'll just tell you about it. Yesterday, he finally gets the ball. 6 catches, 80 yards, 9 targets. Then after the game, he was asked about the meeting that Saquon Barkley admitted they had, that Jalen Hurts admitted they had this week. And he goes, oh, what meeting? I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about. Don't remember a meeting. Stop acting weird. Stop doing all this nonsense that takes away from winning. Just be a good teammate. Just catch the ball and shut up. A.J. Brown, Fumble of the Week nominee. So, A.J. Brown, Amari DeMercado, Bill Belichick, The Athletic, really, Will Leach, James Franklin, our U.S. government, all Bum of the Week nominees. The winner for causing what feels like eternal pain, for losing the most embarrassing game of 2025, and for making excuses afterwards, James Franklin. You're the Bum of the Week, bro.
That's your Bum of the Week.
I detest you!
On Lighter Than You.
Let me tell you this really fast. It could get ugly in Happy Valley tomorrow. They play Northwestern. It is homecoming. There's going to be a lot of Philly fans in the building. And with the Phillies losing in heartbreaking fashion, with the Eagles stinking right now, there's going to be a lot of anger. If Penn State goes 3-and-out on that first drive, the Boo Birds are going to be out. They're going to be loud. James Franklin, better the boys ready to play. Big thank you to Jack Carty for producing today. Big thank you to Andrew Bogish and Cole Thompson. A big thank you to you. Thank you for making us a part of your day. Bill is back on Monday. This has been Ryan Hickey. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday on Ryder Than You.